I want to tell you a story about my friend Tor. But before I do, I have to tell you two little things that will become important at the end. The first one is when I wrote him a letter in April of 2025, I addressed it to my dear young friend, which was at the time merely a polite form of address. It has since become, well, a name I call him from time to time when I'm being serious. So put a pin in that. The other thing is in that letter, I talked about vision, how my vision has improved with age, metaphorical vision, that is. And in our meeting in Portland, August 29th, I had a lot to say. We met for 5 hours. And among other things, I said to him, remember this, I see further than you do. So put a pin in that. We'll use those at the end. So we were having our 5-hour meeting in Portland, business meeting, covered everything I needed to cover. And in hour 5, I think we were in a restaurant and I was running out of things to say and he was looking at his phone, I'm looking at my phone. And I thought, this is the time for the gambit. It was something I wanted to share with him that I'll share with you tonight. And I didn't just blurt it out because everyone will reject if you blurt this out, but I wanted to recite poetry at him. And you don't just say, I want to recite poetry at you. People will, So I said, you know, I don't wish to criticize your performance in front of the camera, but sometimes you're rushing a little bit. And maybe you could use some rubato. He's a trained musician. He knows what rubato is, but I'll explain it for you. It's a musical term, Italian word. They're all Italian in music. It means to rob time from one measure to the next. It's uneven rhythm for artistic effect. So I said, I can demonstrate rubato to you. Well, not here in a restaurant, when we get back to the hotel. He said, okay. And I don't remember if it was at the restaurant or at the hotel. I explained what I was going to read to him. I use a lot of rubato when I read aloud, as I often do, particularly to small children. When my niece and nephew were little, I read a lot to them. Abby would climb up on me and say, read to me. So, and the rubato has been getting more and more pronounced, not to say exaggerated, over the years. But I could demonstrate this one children's book without the book. Because though I don't do poetry, of all the poetry and all the children's books in all the world, there is one that I had committed to memory. Okay. So I put him in a chair. He'd been standing and moving about and fidgeting all through the meeting before that. Put him in a chair. Echoed some of his own words back to him from what was then called Doll Stories. Now, children's author who never grew up. You can look it up. And I said, okay, make yourself comfortable. Make yourself comfortable. Cast your mind back. You are 4. Tor at 4. So little and so literal. Nani, his late grandmother, Nani couldn't be here today. She sent me as a stand-in. I'll read you a poem, a nonsense poem by Edward Lear. It's called The Jumblies. He wrote it in 1871, ever so long ago. And it has 6 verses. It goes like this. They went to sea in a sieve, they did. In a sieve, they went to sea. In spite of all their friends could say, on a wintry morn, on a stormy day, in a sieve they went to sea. And as the sieve spun round and round, and everyone said, they'll all be drowned, they cried aloud, our sieve ain't big, but we don't care a button, we don't care a fig, in a sieve we'll go to sea. Far and few are the lands where the Jumblies live. Their heads are green and their hands are blue, and they went to sea in a sieve. They went to sea in a sieve, they did. In a sieve they sailed so fast, with only a beautiful pea-green veil tied with a ribbon by way of a sail to a small tobacco pipe mast. And everyone said who saw them go, oh, won't they be soon upset, you know? For the sky is dark and the voyage is long, and happen what may, it's extremely wrong in a sieve to sail so fast. Far and few are the lands where the Jumblies live. Their heads are green and their hands are blue, and they went to sea in a sieve. My mother's favorite verse. The water it soon came in, it did. The water it soon came in. So to keep them dry, they wrapped their feet in a pinky paper all folded neat, and they fastened it down with a pin. And they passed the night in a crockery jar, and each of them said, "How wise we are! Though the sky be dark and the voyage be long, yet we never can think we were rash or wrong while round in our sieve we spin." Far and few are the lands where the Jumblies live. Their heads are green and their hands are blue, and they went to sea in a sieve. And all night long they sailed away, and when the sun went down, they whistled and warbled a moony song to the echoing sound of a coppery gong in the shade of the mountains brown. "O Timbaloo, how happy we are to live in a sieve and a crockery jar." And all night long in the moonlight pale, we'll sail away with a pea-green sail in the shade of the mountains brown. Far and few are the lands where the Jumblies live. Their heads are green and their hands are blue, and they went to sea in a sieve. They sailed to the western sea, they did, to a land all covered with trees. And they bought an owl, hoot, and a useful cart, and a pound of rice and a cranberry tart, and a hive of silvery bees. And they bought a pig, and some green jackdaws, and a lovely monkey with lollipop paws, and 40 bottles of Ringbowrie and no end of Stilton cheese. Far and few are the lands where the Jumblies live. Their heads are green and their hands are blue, and they went to sea in a sieve. And in 20 years, they all came back, in 20 years or more. And everyone said, "How tall they've grown, for they've been to the lakes and the torrible zone, and the hills of the Chankly Bore." And they drank their health and gave them a feast of dumplings made of beautiful yeast. And everyone said, "If only we live, we too shall go to sea in a sieve, to the hills of the Chankly Bore." Far and few are the lands where the Jumblies live. Their heads are green and their hands are blue, and they went to sea in a sieve. And I smiled and Tor smiled. And that was that for the moment. The next day or two, when I got home, I decided to test him, see if it worked. And I texted him quite out of the blue. "They bought an owl and a useful cart and a pound of rice and a cranberry tart and a hive of silvery bees." And you can hear he's typing immediately. He comes back, far and few are the lands where the Jumblies live. Their hands are green and their heads are blue, and they went to sea in a sieve. Then right away he asks, "Did I get that right? Did you get the coloration of heads and hands right? Or is it that way, the other way around?" And I said, "Yes, you did." And he said, "I'm so glad." A minute later, through my tears, I looked at it harder, and I said, "Oh, its heads are green, hands are blue." And he said something terribly important. But we were both wrong, so we allowed each other the satisfaction of believing we were right. Now, I had been reading about autism at that point. A couple weeks earlier, he had said something to me that made me wonder, was that a factor in his, let's say, inaccurately predicting the emotions in the receiver? That's something he said. Sure enough, you Google it, deficit in emotional processing is out there in the literature. And I looked at that and said, yeah, right. That's no deficit. That was precocious for any 24-year-old, autism or not. About 10 minutes later, when I had regained my composure, I replied to that and just said, "You see much, my dear young friend."